the final Future Ready Iowa Alliance meeting in which they made the recommendations to us on how we're going to help hit our goal of having 70% of Iowans in the workforce. But before I get started, there's some people that are here that I would like to say thank you to. I want to thank Director Townsend and where's Linda? Linda Fandel. Appreciate your work. Director Wise, thank you very much for your involvement in this. Georgia and the Iowa Business Council, we really appreciate the outreach that you have provided, really engaging our top employers across the state. So she knows she's not off the hook. We're just getting started. So I thought I should thank her, you know, before and then keep her on board. And Chris DeReith, you have been involved in this from the very first trip to Oklahoma when Governor Fallon, this was her initiative when she led the NGA. So you've seen it at every step of the way, and we appreciate the continuity that you've brought to the process. So hopefully I haven't forgot anybody. We have a lot of other stakeholders that have been involved in this initiative, and we're really excited to launch it today. So Lieutenant Governor Greg and I are pleased to be joined today, who is my co-chair, who I could not have been more prouder to serve with, Dan Houston, who is the chairman, president, and CEO of Principal Financial. And today we took a major step in really helping us achieve the goal. And what the 70% by 2025 goal means is it means that 127,700 new Iowans will be earning degrees and other credentials. And really, we talk a lot about numbers, and that's a big number, but the one thing that it really, what that means or equates to is opportunities for Iowans. It's opportunities for Iowans, for the communities, for our businesses, and our state. This is also about an opportunity for Iowans to choose from an entry-level STEM job, science, technology, engineering, and math, which pays an average $42,000 a year, instead of starting out in a non-STEM related job, which averages about $27,000 a year. And when you think about it, that's real money. That's money that'll fund vacations, cars, gadgets for the young people. But for older graduates, it means a down payment on a home. It means savings for college for their children, financial freedom from debt and worry. And it also is an opportunity for businesses to fill jobs that are open right now. As we have the opportunity to visit companies all across Iowa, we routinely hear about how job openings exist, but they're unable to find workers to fill them. I'll give you just a couple examples. In Clarinda, we were at H&H Trailers, and they're ready to hire 75 people today. We're at VT Industry in their three sites, Clarksville, Holstein, and Sac City. It's a buildings product company. They're looking to fill 50 openings today. Vermeer would hire 100 workers today, and that is the same story that I hear all across the state of Iowa. And if you go to the Iowa Workforce Development, their average to their website, there's more than 50,000 job listings, and many of them are in the high-demand STEM fields. In fact, we just looked a little bit ago, and I think it was 71,000 today. So that's an average. Point is, lots of jobs, lots of opportunity. So we want our families filling vibrant communities in every county in the state. And to do this, it all starts with people. And this morning, the Future Ready Iowa Alliance met, they made the recommendations to help us reach our goal. And it is an ambitious goal of 70% of Iowans in the workforce having education or training beyond high school by 2025. So I'm grateful to the Alliance for the time and the expertise of its members that they've really invested over the past year to make the recommendations, and we are anxious to move them forward. So the Alliance's first recommendation is to establish the Future Ready Iowa Last Dollar Scholarship and a Future Ready Iowa Grant Program. The Future Ready Iowa Last Dollar Scholarship, that will help bridge the financial divide with money for Iowans seeking up to an associate's degree at Iowa colleges and universities. Again, that's tied to high-demand jobs. At Iowa's community colleges, this money will help cover the cost of tuition and mandatory fees after they have applied other financial aid, gifts, and grants. The Future Iowa grant is for Iowans seeking a bachelor's degree who already have earned more than half of the credits in a major, again, leading to a high-demand job. The Iowa Employer Innovation Fund will offer options to encourage individual employers community partnerships and community partnerships to invest in a variety of ways to enhance the Future Ready Iowa Last Dollar, Dollar Scholarship and grants. And what we hope this will do also will help really strengthen the regional workforce talent pipeline. So it starts to tie together a lot of the programs and initiatives that are already in place and really help supplement the Last Dollar Scholarship and the grant fund. The Employer Innovation Fund could also include a number of creative ways to broaden education opportunities. That would include future-ready internships, increasing the number of future-ready Iowa scholarships, paying performance-based bonuses with high school students earning industry certifications, or providing extra funding for scholarship and grant recipients for books, tools, and other needs through the Future-Ready Iowa Enhancement Fund. So those are all part of recommendation number one. The second recommendation is that we need to better align and expand the existing ecosystem of support for Iowans who are beginning college or career training, whether they're brand new high school graduates or adults who want to upskill, with a focus on really low-income Iowans, underserved and underrepresented. And that should include ensuring that they have access to intensive career counseling and mentoring. So, as I indicated, the Future Ready Iowa initiative is really driven by the vision of 70% of Iowans in the workforce having opportunities to have a great career and a great opportunity. And it's going to be an accomplishing it by working together with a relentless focus on creating more opportunities for Iowans, employers, and communities in our state. So, very, very grateful to the Future Ready Iowa Alliance, and I'm grateful to the Illumina Foundation for really helping us get started and get to the point that we're at. And now I'd like to turn it over to Lieutenant Governor Gregg.
Thank you, Governor Reynolds. In addition to the Future Ready Iowa Last Dollar Scholarships and Grant and strengthening the system of support for students, the Alliance made three other recommendations that I'd like to walk through. They build on the good work already underway in communities all across the state. Recommendation number three is to expand high-quality work-based learning experiences in high-demand careers to all students, but particularly for those who are underserved. This is an opportunity for our employers to increase pre-apprenticeship, apprenticeship, and internship programs and make sure that there's equity and access, both in urban and rural areas. Another example for work-based learning is STEM Best. BEST is an acronym for Businesses Engaging Students and Teachers, which was started by the Governor's STEM Advisory Council. Students explore STEM careers through hands-on, real-world projects designed by industry professionals and educators, with amazing opportunities to connect with their communities. Recommendation number four is to identify early academic approaches that effectively prepare all students for a changing world. This could include expanding after-school programs for children, continuing to ensure high-quality instruction throughout K-12 education, and maximizing and expanding concurrent enrollment opportunities. The fifth and final recommendation is to develop a grassroots, from-the-ground-up strategy to engage the business community, sector boards, regional workforce boards, STEM regions, and other current and future regional collaborations. This will allow us to map out existing regional and local workforce partnerships and fill any gaps that exist within a community or a region. The bottom line is this. This will be a full, all-out effort with employers, local schools, chambers of commerce, and economic developers and nonprofits all dedicating their money, time, and energy to improving careers and financial stability for Iowans. So how do we achieve all this? The state will be an important partner. But this is not something that our administration can do alone. Success will be driven by communities that best understand local needs. It will take all of us. Schools and colleges highlighting these high-demand, high-paying jobs for students, local businesses and factories offering internships, training, and other professional experiences, and community leaders working with students of every age to give them the opportunities they want and deserve. This is a significant effort, but with its success will come great rewards. These opportunities will not only benefit the state, our economy, our communities, and our families, these opportunities will reshape entire futures. As the governor said at the very top, Future Ready Iowa means growing opportunity all across our great state. Governor Reynolds, Dan Houston, and I are looking forward to going out on a Future Ready Iowa tour this week to talk with Iowans about those opportunities. And at this time, I'd like to turn it over to Principal CEO Dan Houston. Dan?
Thank you. First thing I'd like to say, it's been a truly a privilege and honor to work with Governor Reynolds on this very important initiative, as well as Lieutenant Governor Gregg. Certainly been a different experience for me in running a public company to engage in the public sector, but it has been incredibly rewarding. And one of the reasons I found it so rewarding is how bipartisan this was. It was a very, very strong effort across all facets of political thoughts and beliefs, as well as across all the sectors, whether it was a community college or four-year college. And so many people representing the military, unions, everyone was in that room. And I thought when I first got lined up with this to try to lead 55 people along with the governor, what would that look like? And it turned out to be a very rewarding experience on a couple of different levels, the first of which is everyone had a common interest. What was the common interest? That you could look back 15 years from now and ask yourself the question, did we improve education? Did we improve the probability of having better jobs? And ultimately, did we make Iowa a better place to live with higher incomes and higher satisfaction? It's my personal belief that Future Ready of Iowa is going to march us down that path, give us a higher probability of success in those areas. You've heard both the governor and lieutenant governor talk about the metrics. I will tell you that the group that came together was very metrics driven. They really believe profoundly that if executed properly and properly funded, we can truly hit 70% of Iowans having post-secondary education to help propel their career. At Principal, we roughly have 7,000 employees in Iowa. We literally have hundreds of internships. We know firsthand, and closely working with the various businesses throughout Iowa, that the more internships, the more apprenticeships, the more opportunity to have the business community engaging directly with schools and trade schools and people of all backgrounds, the higher probability we'll have for overall success. And it's already begun. The Iowa Business Council stands prepared and ready to help move these initiatives along, again, representing a large percentage of the workplace in Iowa. We had the good fortune, Governor, to go out to Waukee and visit directly the APEX program. You can't make it up. When you look at the eyes of these students and their ability to engage, not with their faculties, but I would almost say their peers, these educators, these instructors, these teachers have been differently defined. Their heart and their soul is aligned in helping make every one of those students successful. And it isn't just the best student. It isn't just those that are going to go into some sort of STEM career. These are the average Iowans putting themselves in a better position to have success. I would dare to believe we talked to certain students that may not have even completed school, but they finally found a passion they could identify with, whatever that was. So again, hats off to not only the Waukee School District, Boone, and a variety of other school districts now have adopted programs that allow this. So I would tell you, it was a very worthwhile initiative to go after. I'd also like to thank all of the Alliance members for participating. But with that, I will now turn it over back to the governor for questions. Thank you.
And I think actually when we were at Waukee Apex, either you handed the young man that we were working with your card or he handed you his, or there was an exchange. I can't remember which, but we see that a lot out there.
Well, he contacted me within 48 hours.
There we go. There we go. And that's what they do. That is actually what you see happening out there. So it's pretty exciting. Questions on this topic? Well, okay, so they just made the recommendations today, but as I indicated, this is the number one priority of our administration, and, you know, it's necessary, it's critical. As we travel the state and we talk about the need for a skilled workforce, that's how we're going to continue to grow the economy and provide opportunities for Iowans. So they've made the recommendations. I have to, again, wait until I get the December Revenue Estimating Conference numbers. That's what I'll build my budget off of, but it is a priority, and so we're going to we're going to do what we can to find the funds to support the initiative. Once we drill down and find and look at what those numbers are. But in addition to that, it's a public-private partnership, so we already have the private sector that's stepping up and being a partner in this, so we don't want to underestimate their value in the process. And the other thing that I want to just reiterate is it's not necessarily about creating new programs. So the Last Dollar Scholarship and the grant program, those are two new supplements, but really what we've done is we've taken a look at a lot of great programs that are already working across the state, and we're aligning them and looking to scale the ones that are working really based on the various regions across the state, because there are different needs in Northwest Iowa than there are in Southwest Iowa. So we understand to accelerate the skilled workforce at a pace that we need to. It is going to require some new funding, and we're committed to doing our part to make sure that this is successful. Well, we're going to, you know, it'll be millions. It's not going to be thousands, but I'm not going to throw out a number now. That would be reckless for me to do that. We just got the recommendations. We'll sit down and work with the agencies that will be involved. We'll take a look at what opportunities the private sector has, and taking a look at opportunities to realign some of the existing programs or to incorporate them into the Future Ready Iowa. You know, Tim Cook, when he was out at Waukee Apex, he talked about he couldn't believe what he witnessed out there. We had Mike Rowe with Dirty Jobs that was talked to 1,600 people a couple weeks ago. So that's the wide range. Both highlighted the amazing things that are already taking place in Iowa. So we're starting from a good place, and we want to look for opportunities to accelerate that and really meet the needs of Iowans and our employers across this state. Well, so that'll be the next steps, Barbara. So what we need to do, part of that, we need to look through the recommendations. We need to understand what we can do already, what exists that we can scale. And then if there are areas, for instance, the Last Dollar Scholarships or the grant program, there will be policy that we'll have to put in place for that. So not all of it will require legislation, but some of it will, and so that's part of the next steps that we'll be working through with the recommendations that we just received. Metrics are a big part of this. It really helps us make better decisions. It helps us allocate the funding in the areas that we can get the best results from. And we want to hit the ground running. We want to, you know, it's critical right now. So it's imperative that we really seek some good progress and momentum in the next couple of years. And so all of that, we'll be working through all of that in the next couple of months as we get ready for the legislative session. Well, it's my number one priority, so I'm ready to go with it. So it's definitely, this will be part of my program moving forward. And I'm excited about it because it is really an opportunity for Iowans, for our underserved, underrepresented. We've got a lot of great things in place for that talent pipeline, teacher leadership and compensation, the STEM initiative, the apprenticeship programs, pre-apprenticeship programs, STEM Best. We've seen that go from 5 programs to 18. We had 30 school districts across the state apply to participate in the STEM Best program. And so there's a lot of momentum, a lot of interest. We're seeing school districts transform, and now we have to work with maybe the older adult population and help them complete, get the skills, get a degree, get a certification, get into an apprenticeship program, and really provide them the mentoring and the support system that they need and that, quite frankly, they deserve to help get them a better quality of life.
Are you concerned that Iowa's spending a lot of time and energy educating people who are just going to leave the state? What are we doing to prevent that?
No, because that's been one of the best things. That's an outcome that's positive that we've actually been able to measure from the STEM initiative. So that's something we can build on. So what we've been able to track through the Iowa Assessment Program is students that have participated in the Iowa STEM Scale-Up programs by a fairly significant margin are saying they're more likely to stay in the state. But the key is, really, what's made all the difference in the world is bringing business and industry and academia, education, the students together, as Dan talked about. I mean, they see the opportunities that exist within their communities. They see the great jobs that are available. It helps them make those career decisions early on, so they're very focused and passionate about a career that that they see that's available, attainable. It's in the state. It has a good return on investment. So this is a great career. It pays well. And I think that connects all of it. Maybe you want to speak to that?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
No.
You know, there's an old adage in the training area. There's only one thing worse than training and educating people and having them leave. It's not training and educating them and having them stay. No. Iowa doesn't have a choice. We've got to get 127,000 people prepared to do higher skilled jobs in this state if it is desirable for us to be a state of choice for establishing businesses. You heard the governor rattle through a whole list of companies looking for 100, 200, 300 employees. So we can talk about the cost of this program, but I think ultimately the cost is going to be how do we get 127,000 people making above industry wages to kind of help continue to drive this economy. If we don't do that, if we fail at doing that, these jobs will go away. There's frankly just too many other choices to move those jobs. So it will require an investment. It will require reprioritization of some of the current dollars being spent. But I know that the governor and lieutenant governor have the discipline around looking at the existing programs, interrogating those. Are they accomplishing what they're supposed to be accomplishing? If they're not, terminate them and move those same dollars into other programs that can stimulate growth for the economy.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere in between. There you go. Okay. It's a priority. And Dan just laid out why. I mean, that solves so many problems. The biggest barrier to continued growth in this state is a skilled workforce. But it's about opportunity also for Iowans. So it will be a priority of this administration. We'll take a look at the budget when we get the numbers in December, and we'll make those decisions moving forward. No, you know what? If we're always working on bringing jobs and companies to the state of Iowa, but we have to continue to make sure that we have a skilled workforce ready to meet the needs, and that's what we're working on every single day.
Are we still going after Amazon?
We're competing for companies every single day. Anything else? Okay.
You've written a letter about the renewable fuel standard.
Mm-hmm.
How worried are you that the president will not fulfill his promise and will side with the oil industry?
Well, you know, that's why we're not taking anything for granted. That's why we sent the letter. That's why I'll be out in Washington, D.C. next week. I'm going to sit down with Administrator Pruitt again. I have a meeting scheduled with Vice President Pence. When they were in the state, both Administrator Pruitt and the president, you know, they made a commitment to RFS and to renewable fuels. And especially with the volatile ag economy that we are dealing with right now, this would have a devastating impact. Not only to Iowa farmers, but to rural America. And this is about economic growth in rural America. It's about choice at the pump. And they were, you know, every conversation I've had with both of them, as they've agreed with that. I complimented them really on their timely response. That hadn't been happening. That helped bring some stability back to the market. I wasn't happy with where they ended up with the advanced fuels, biodiesel and cellulosic. I testified at the EPA hearing to that and to some issues, areas where I thought I challenged them to do more, because I believe that we can meet that expectation. We're already doing it, and that was the whole intent of the RFS, to keep us innovative and growing and using renewable fuels. So, you know, we just can't let up. I think, you know, we've got a big advocate with both of our senators and our congressional delegation. They're all weighing in, and we can't stop. So I'm going to keep working it every day until we get the decision that we're hoping for and that we want.
Is meeting with Secretary Pruitt and Vice President Pence enough, though? I mean, you said yourself they've agreed with you.
Well, I just want to make sure that we're answering all their questions, that there isn't something that they're still if they have any additional questions that we can answer. It's an opportunity to make my point again. I got to participate in the energy roundtable that the White House held a couple months ago. I took that opportunity to talk about the importance of renewable fuels, ethanol, biodiesel. So at any time I've had the opportunity to get in front of them, we're making the pitch, we're talking about it, and we're going to continue to do that, as we should. And I'm just going to hold them accountable.
It just doesn't seem like they're the ones you need to convince, though. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, I think you need to keep talking to them. I think Administrator Pruitt is somebody that I need to keep talking to, as well as the President and the Vice President.
Do you need the President to tell Pruitt what to do? Because Pruitt has revised the proposal so that if one thing happens, he can move.
Well, they're in comment. Yeah. Well, they're in comment period right now, so we'll have an opportunity to get out there before that ends and walk through again why I think that's not the right thing to do and the impact that that will have on some of the decisions that they're looking at. They've said this is just a comment period. It's part of the process that they're going through. I want to make sure that that's all it is, and so I want to make sure that I continue to sit across the table from them and reiterate why this is important, not only to Iowans, but to rural America, and so they need to follow through with what they told us when they were campaigning and what they promised that they would do to support the renewable fuel standard, and we're not going to let up. Senator Grassley is doing the same thing. Senator Ernst is holding them accountable, too, and so we just need to continue to do our job. I know Governor Ricketts, I believe, is meeting also with Administrator Pruitt. So. No, I don't think so. No. Secretary Perry was in the energy meeting that I had at the White House, sat across the table, and the President asked him, how do you feel about renewable fuels, Rick? And he said, well, I found a new appreciation for renewable fuels and ethanol. So, you know, I think the President at that meeting made it very clear that he was still supportive of the renewable fuel industry. But we can't let up. I just don't think you can't stop until it's done. We've been doing this since the inception. It's been a continuous fight.
What is your mindset as you're dealing with the President on both RFS and the stopgap for insurance? Is he making you sweat? Do you trust him?
Well, you know, we're working on both fronts. I can do both issues at one time, and I have to do both issues because it's really important for the state of Iowa and for Iowans. And so we're in touch with the White House almost every single day regarding the stopgap proposal. The 1332 waiver it's not very flexible. It's really, they have us very boxed in. And so we're trying to be innovative and creative in a structure that is designed not to allow that. So it's extremely frustrating to try to really find a solution so that Iowans have access to health care come January 1. So that's one issue. We're working all the time with whether it's his deputy chief of staff or whether it's Seema Verma with CMS or whether it's the White House. I can't even begin to tell you the amount of time that my staff has put into that, as they should, and they're, you know, it's front and center. But the RFS has an impact on Iowans as well and on our economy, and especially as we've seen the volatility in the commodity prices. It's really, really important now that we don't do one more thing to really impact the price of commodity prices in rural Iowa and the impact that has on farmers and families across the state of Iowa and the Midwest. So we're working every day on both.
Governor, at what point is there concern about outreach with the public from 72,000 individuals on the individual insurance market? If this gets approved in the next couple of days, what's the state's game plan for making sure that every Iowan gets that information?
Well, and I talked about this a little bit last week. I mean, they know, so a lot of them receive.
I don't think they do.
Well, a lot of them have received letters, but that's regardless. I mean, we're still going to do our part. You know, we've got a process in place, and we've got the website set up that's ready to do the outreach and to get them signed up. And so we'll be ready to go and to make sure it's not live. So, I mean, it doesn't run the risk that the website had when we went to Obamacare, but we're ready to go. We're notifying, and Iowans will know, but a lot of them do know. A lot of them already received the notice from Aetna when they pulled out of the market. So they've already received that, so we're hoping that we have some resolution by the end of this week. We want to start signing Iowans up by November, and we're going to continue to look for solutions to make sure that we can have an answer for Iowans come January 1. It's extremely difficult.
Regarding the opioid epidemic, I was just in news yesterday where a nursing home fell victim to an armed robbery, people who wanted medication. So I guess what can you tell Iowans right now about what's being done about this epidemic that is police say is
Yeah, actually, we've actually saw the numbers go down. So while that's encouraging, we need to do our due diligence, and we need to stay in the forefront. The Office of Drug Control, Director Lucan, and Public Health have consistently been working together on programs. I'm actually going to do an opioid awareness week next week. We're going to launch that, where we'll be in communities, really hosting some roundtables where we can start to talk about outreach, education, and how we can get in front of what we've seen really be horrific abuses in some of the states, especially on the eastern side of the United States, which is just some horrible, devastating statistics of individuals that are dealing with opioid abuse. And so we want to stay in front of that, and we want to listen and collect information and then talk about what our ideas are going forward. And so we'll be...
Some state legislators have been over the past couple of days on this very subject. Do you hope to see any kind of legislation move on this in the coming session? Do you have anything in mind?
Well, we're open to that. So we'll wait and see what they found out from the meetings that they've held, and then we can take the information that we're gathering from the roundtables that we're hosting across the state, and then I think collectively we need to take a look if there's something that requires legislation that would help, or if there's just other areas that we can. Sometimes it doesn't always take legislation. There's a lot of other positive things that we can do in communities all across the state to really raise awareness. To the prescription drop-off is something that we're already doing. I was in a pharmacy on our 99-county tour in Bedford, and it was amazing the amount of prescriptions that they had dropped off in the pharmacy. So just there's a lot of things already in place, and we just need to continue to raise awareness and look for other opportunities to complement what's already taking place.
Two more, Jack. You said you were going to be in Washington next week and talk to people about the RFS. Do you also expect to be talking in person to people about the stop-gap issue?
Yes. Well, I'm not going to weigh in on that today. I want to get out and hold some of these forums and roundtables, and then I'll work with the legislators, and we'll take a look at what makes sense moving forward. So right now, there's a lot of stuff that's on the table, but I want to take a look at what it looks like holistically to move forward with that.
All right, thank you, Governor.